Evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. Before we start, just to say that John Murray's close friend, Peter Mamoreau, just passed away today. So we're wishing John well. And also, this afternoon, I talked on the phone with Rick Spencer. He wanted to talk because he thinks that he's going to die very soon. And he wanted to say goodbye. And it was great to talk to him. He's comfortable, and he's hearing lots of voicemails, and Arhelia is reading him emails and cards and expressions of love from all the Sangha members in Mexico that he's helped. And I think that he didn't kind of realize, you know, how much love he was gathering up all these years, you know. So I think it sort of was a pleasant surprise to him to hear how well loved he is. And I got to say goodbye and how much I appreciate him. And, you know, it's not... I've actually he's one of my disciples, so to speak, that I ordained and gave him Dharma transmission, and it is a little dismaying how many people that I'm in that relationship with who have died. I don't have the number, but it's more than five or six. It's a lot. So it's a very sad thing for me. Anyway, at the moment he's still alive, and we said at the end, well, you might live for another days or weeks, who knows how long, so we don't know exactly. But it was a goodbye call. Anyway, that's on my heart, so I wanted to couldn't not mention it. So we're going to continue. This is our second week, continuing our study of Dogen's essay, Refrain from Unwholesome Action. We introduced it and talked about it a lot last week. In this fascicle, he talks about the three pure precepts. Refrain from unwholesome action, do good action, purify the mind. And last week, we went on for quite a while and almost got to the end of the section of the text on the first pure precept, refrain from unwholesome conduct. And as we saw, as we read it, as usual, Dogen opens up the scope of this simple, clear teaching quite a bit. And I mentioned last week Suzuki Roshi's saying, our practice is Hinayana practice with Mahayana mind. And Dogen's essay on this precept, on these precepts, are a great illustration of that. So in this case, he's saying that we're simply and clearly, in a very sort of mundane, everyday way, practicing refrain from unwholesome action. And yet our understanding of what we're doing is very, very broad and forgiving. And when I say understanding, you might think, well, an understanding is an idea or an abstraction. But in Dogen's and Suzuki Roshi's hands, the word understanding takes on new dimensions. It's a matter not only of how we think about things, but also how we feel in the midst of our lives. What is our spirit in how we live? And in this case, we hope that our spirit is broad and generous and deep. That's what we were reading about so far. And tonight, we're going to start with Dogen's final paragraphs about this pure precept. Tonight, we'll start with the final paragraphs about the first pure precept. I'm having trouble speaking here. First pure precept, and then we will go on to the second and the third pure precepts. So here's the last part of what he says about the first. Studying in this way, referring to all he said already, actualizes the fundamental point. The fundamental point is actualized. Investigate this through host and investigate this through guest. So as some of you will know, the fundamental point is a technical term in Dogen's writing. It's one of his most important terms. And it's an English translation of the word Genjo Koan, which can be translated in a lot of different ways. It's a very suggestible word in Japanese. But here, Kaz translates it as the fundamental point. Other people translate it as, for instance, the koan of the present moment, the koan of the arising of this moment. So this is the heart of our practice, and this is something that we should investigate always, inside and outside. The fascicle, the essay called called Genjo Koan, because that's one of Dogen's essays in Shobogenzo. It's probably his most famous, most important, and certainly most translated essay. It was the first of Dogen's writings to be translated into English, I think in the early 1960s or maybe the late 1950s. And I think many of you know it well. It's a brilliant poetic piece that encapsulates his teaching. Sometimes I think that that's the only thing you need to know about our practice. If you just study Genjo Koan, that, you don't need anything else. You know, it's all, pretty much everything that we value and that we practice is there. And in Genjo Koan, he's saying, in effect, everything is always awakening. You know, reality is awakening reality. Everything, therefore, is always Buddha mind. Everything is always perfect, no matter what happens. And yet, because we're human beings, in order to appreciate this reality that is real no matter what we do, we have to practice. And we practice not in order to fix or change something, but simply to realize our humanness. That's more or less the essence of Genjo Koan, and that's the essence of Dogen's teaching and of our practice. Host and guest, the technical words used in this passage, Kaz interprets them as meaning self and other, which is right, but that would not show you that self and other themselves have a much wider meaning. Sometimes host and guest are understood to be teacher and disciple, the teacher being the host and the disciple being the guest. Or sometimes they're understood as the absolute and the relative, the host being the absolute, the guest being the relative. So there are many dimensions to this pair of terms. And we could say that Genjo Koan is host and guest meeting together in this very moment. So Dogen is telling us that all of this is the precept refrain from unwholesome action, which at this point we realize Dogen sees not as a simple moral guideline, although it is that, but at the same time a profound recognition of what it means to be human. So back to Dogen's words. Since this is so, regretting that you have created what should not be created is also inevitably the practice of refrain from. Nevertheless, intending to create unwholesome action, just because you hear that unwholesome action is refrained from, is just like walking north to try to get to the southern county of Yue. So now Dogen sort of flips back to talking about the precept of refrain from unwholesome action on the ordinary everyday level. It means, first of all, of course, we didn't go into this, but it implies, of course, we know what unwholesome action is, and we know what it is that we're trying to refrain from. But here he's saying that in order to practice that, you will slip up. It is inevitable. You will make mistakes. You will sometimes not refrain from unwholesome action, because everybody is going to make mistakes. We're human. So we know that. And then when we make mistakes, since we really care about keeping that precept, we feel badly. It's a terrible feeling. And that bad feeling is part of the practice of the precepts. That's what he's saying. Then he says, but don't misunderstand me. Don't think that because before, earlier in the text, I said that unwholesome action is itself already refraining. Maybe you remember, that was a very hard thing to understand. But he's saying, even when the unwholesome action is done, it is itself already refraining from unwholesome action. Just because I said that, in other words, basically what that means is, all sins are already forgiven. All sins are already forgiven. Just because I said that doesn't mean that you can go around not practicing refraining from unwholesome conduct. You better do it. No, if you think that that's what I meant, and you think, well, since everything is already forgiven, I don't need to worry so much about it. If you think like that, then it's like trying to practice the Dharma when really what you're doing is the opposite. You're going in exactly the wrong direction. Instead of practicing Buddha Dharma, you're practicing nihilism. And Dharma is not nihilism. It's not amorality or immorality. Don't think that. Then back to Dogen, he says, refrain from and unwholesome action are not only the well seeing the donkey, but also the well seeing the well, and the donkey seeing the donkey, the person seeing the person, the mountain seeing the mountain. Just as we speak in this way, unwholesome action is refrained from. It is said, Buddha's true body is like the empty sky. It manifests forms responding to conditions just like the moon reflected in the water. Because it is refrained from that responds to things, it is refrained from that manifests forms. It is just like emptiness that claps toward the left and claps toward the right, just like the moon reflected in water. The moon is fully immersed in water. In this way, refrain from is actualized without doubt. Well, that is a big mouthful there from Dogen. Well, the donkey looking at the well, like so much of what Dogen says, is, you know, from a Zen story. He assumes that his listeners know this story and that he can riff on it without having to explain it. But the story basically is, and Dogen is using the words from the story without telling you that he is, but here's the way the story goes. The Zen master says, the true Dharma body of the Buddha is like empty space. It manifests its shape in response to beings like the moon reflected in the water. And then he calls on his monastics to have a, what do they think about this? And one of them says, yes, it's like a donkey looking into a well. And the master says, well, that's 80 or 90% of it. And then the monastic says, okay, well, what do you say? And he says, it's like a well looking into a donkey. So that's the story that Dogen is using in this passage. And more or less, it's about the world and the Buddha being the same and different at the same time, and each and every thing in that world being also just like that. In other words, is the world a reflection of the Buddha? Or is the Buddha a reflection of the world? Are you really Buddha? Is Buddha really you? Is keeping the precept of refraining from unwholesome action, Buddha action, already perfected? Which gives rise to everything in the world? Or is it just ordinary you and me trying our best to be decent and to follow the precept? And the answer is, it's both. And we can't skimp on either side of that. Well, as a philosophical principle, maybe that's comprehensible. But what's really important about it is that it means that we practice this precept not with fear of getting it wrong or, you know, messing up, not even with a desire to do the right thing and be a good Buddhist. It means that we practice this precept with full joy and ease, knowing that in doing it we are manifesting and expressing Buddha, not just being a good boy or a good girl. And remember, this is something we've been sort of talking about a little bit because it came up when we studied the Dhammapada last month. We talked about restraint a couple times, and which the Dhammapada seems to be constantly recommending. And this is Dogen's version of restraint. So on the one hand, yes, we are restraining ourselves from harmful conduct, although probably most of the time it's not a matter of having to restrain ourselves particularly. But this restraint is fundamentally non-restraint because it's the expansive and brilliant expression of Buddha reality. And whether we practice the precept or not, whatever our conduct is, it is still the brilliant expression of Buddha reality, which is why, knowing that, we have to practice this precept very carefully, because we know this and we appreciate it and we really, really do want to fulfill our human responsibility. We're devoted to that as practitioners of the way. And this phrase you use, emptiness claps to the left and claps to the right, that's a bell, a clapper of a bell, clapping to the right and clapping to the left and making a sound. And that's a reference to a poem that Dogen's teacher Rujing wrote about the sound of the bell of emptiness, which is the sound of silence. The clapping emptiness bell, bang, 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 is silence. And Dogen mentions this poem a number of times, and here he's referring to it. And that is the end. That's the sort of culmination of Dogen's discussion of the precept, refrain from unwholesome action. And now he's going to go into the second of the precepts, pure precepts, do wholesome action. And here's what he says. First paragraph. Do wholesome action. This wholesome action is one of the three natures. Although there are many varieties of wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that is already actualized and waiting for someone to practice it. At the very moment of doing wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that does not come forth. So that is very wonderful. Remember, we said that there are three natures, means three kinds of karma. Good karma, wholesome karma, bad karma or unwholesome karma, and neutral karma. So there's three kinds, and do wholesome action is, of course, the wholesome kind of karma, the positive kind of karma. And Dogen is making the point that there is no ideal goodness out there, you know, some sort of whatever, force of goodness or concept of goodness or energy of goodness out there. There's no Buddha goodness until we practice this precept. Then in the moment of our practicing precept, this precept, goodness arises. It's not there before we do it. It's up to us. And then, he says, when we do that, the goodness that we're giving rise to in that moment transforms the whole universe into goodness. So that is very awesome. He goes on to say, Although myriads of wholesome actions are formless, they arrive at the place where wholesome action is done faster than a magnet drawing iron. It is a power stronger than a Vairambhaka storm. The great earth, mountains, rivers, and lands of the world, or the increasing effect of action, cannot hinder the intentional encounter of wholesome action. So as I just said, it's our doing wholesome action is enormously powerful. When we do wholesome action, meaning when we're simply kind, compassionate, caring, sincerely that way, helpful to others, considerate of others, we draw all the goodness of the universe to the moment in which we are acting. And he says, the power of that is greater than any physical power on earth. There's no typhoon or earthquake or mountain or river that can hinder the power of our intentional practice of wholesome action. And the Vairambhaka storm is the great windstorms that howl throughout the eon, at the end of an eon, or the end of a world. There are these huge storms that come, called Vairambhaka storms. And then after the storms dissipate, the eon, or the world, is gone. But your doing wholesome action is stronger than the power of that. And so I've been, in different ways, you know, speaking about this a lot during these crazy times we're living in, when I think, you know, you could look at the world and you could say, this could scarcely be more terrible, and I feel so powerless. You know, there's nothing that I can do. There's nothing that I can do. And I'm just sitting here watching this horrible stuff take place. And here Dogen is saying, things may be very terrible, but it is not the case that you are powerless. You are not powerless. You are truly very, very powerful. In fact, there is no force on earth more powerful than your act of goodness. Your acts of goodness are far-reaching and effective, even if, in the short term, in the small picture of things, you can't see it. Dogen is saying, it is definitely so. Well, the next passage is a little hard to figure out what Dogen is getting at. And as I was trying to think about it, I thought to myself, well, usually when we're reading Dogen, people have complained for generations about how impossible Dogen is to understand. And so when you encounter a passage in Dogen that you really don't understand, usually you think that it's because Dogen has something in mind that he understands, but you don't. And most of the time, that's probably true. But it occurred to me today, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be true. I mean, why should you be wrong and Dogen right? Maybe Dogen flubbed up in his writing, right? I mean, one doesn't always write perfectly clearly, right? And whose fault is that? Is it the reader's fault or the writer's fault? Maybe it's Dogen's fault. Maybe he's not writing clearly enough. But besides that, it could be that some of the people, I mean, this text only exists because people have copied it. And it's a notorious thing, you know, with religious texts, ancient texts, that there's copying errors. So we don't even know really whether this was what Dogen intended to write. Anyway, I was thinking of that when I couldn't understand this next passage, which says, maybe it doesn't seem that hard to understand to you, but somehow I had a hard time with it. However, there is a principle that views of wholesome action vary in the world. The views define what is wholesome action. It is just the same as all Buddhas in the past, present, and future expounding Dharma. Buddhas expounding Dharma while they are in the world is just time. They expound non-discriminating Dharma according to their lifespans and their dimensions of their bodies. I couldn't quite understand what this had to do exactly with his discussion here of do wholesome action. So I think that it's because earlier when he talked about unwholesome action, he said, remember, we talked about this, unwholesome action differs from place to place and time to time. So it's hard to say exactly, you know, it's hard to list a bunch of things that are the rules for unwholesome action, because it depends on, you know, who you are and where you live and what the circumstances are. And so he's saying this too about wholesome action, but he's not saying it quite in the same way. He's saying, yes, that's true of wholesome action. But then, with all the stuff about the Buddha, he seems to be saying further that despite this, there is also something about unwholesome action different, something about wholesome action different from unwholesome action that is beyond time and place. So they're not exactly mirror images of each other, wholesome and unwholesome action. That's why he brings in the Buddhas. The Buddhas are in the world in particular times and places, just like we are. And yet, the Buddha's teachings are unconditioned. They're not conditioned by their time and place. And he's saying wholesome action is that way too. It's always wholesome action at any time and in any place. And this is different somewhat. There's a nuance here between doing wholesome action and don't do unwholesome action. So here's the next paragraph. This being so, wholesome action by a person who practices trust is far different from wholesome action by a person who practices dharma. Nevertheless, they are not two separate dharmas. It's like a shramana's keeping the precepts and a bodhisattva's breaking the precepts. So what he's saying here is stuff that is very, you know, he's using very traditional categories here. What's the difference between someone who practices trust or faith, the word is sometimes used, faith, and someone who practices dharma? Well, that's an old distinction in Buddhism between the person who follows the teachings with faith and the person who realizes the teaching through practice. And Zen, you know, traditionally thinks of itself as the latter. We realize the truth through practice. We don't just take the teachings on faith. Both groups of people could practice, do wholesome action. Traditionally, of course, the person who takes it on faith is considered less accomplished than the one who realizes it for themselves. There's a kind of a hierarchy of difference there. But Dogen is saying that, yes, I recognize that hierarchy difference, but when it comes to do wholesome action, it's the same thing. There's no difference. And then he sort of says, well, it's like the difference between the shramana, the Pali Canon, monastic practitioner, and the bodhisattva. The shramana precepts, you know, there's 250 clearly written precepts for a monastic. And you must keep the letter of the law. It's not just a flavor, it's a specific. But bodhisattva precepts, and we know because we study all the time our precepts, the 16 bodhisattva precepts are not like that at all. They're more open and they're more flexible, and we don't always know exactly how to behave. But we do know that these precepts depend on the heart intention to love and care for others. And that's the primary moral commitment. And so in that sense, bodhisattvas are often breaking those 252 shramana precepts, but not breaking the 16 bodhisattva precepts. The next passage is another one that's hard to understand. And I'm not so diligent, but for some reason I was diligent this time, and I consulted a number of different translations. And they're very different, one from another, which tells you that this passage is very pithy and hard to get. But and it's because the difficulty is that Dogen so often uses various kinds of Zen phrases that we're not that familiar with. And he uses them as shorthand. And in the Kaz's translation, which is the one we're using, he doesn't translate literally, he interprets in his translation these phrases for us, so that we don't get confused. But it's still not so easy to get what he's saying here. And here's the passage. Wholesome action does not arise due to causes and conditions, nor does it cease due to causes and conditions. Although wholesome action is all phenomena are not wholesome action. Causes and conditions, as well as wholesome actions, equally begin in completeness and end in completeness. Although wholesome action is due, it is not self and not known by self. It is not other and not known by other. In knowing, there is self and other. In seeing, there is self and other. Thus, the vital eye of each is within the sun and within the moon. It's kind of beautiful what he's saying there, even though it's not, you think, what exactly? But it's nice. I like it. So my tentative understanding of that passage, and I'm speaking very broadly, not in the detail of every word, but I think he means that just like unwholesome action includes all of reality, of course, so does wholesome action. And yet, wholesome action does involve our volition, our doing, and our discrimination. Which is to say that we have agency and responsibility and power as human beings. And our doing of wholesome action goes beyond our agency and our responsibility and anything that we can know or see. In other words, we have to discriminate and do what's good, but our doing of good goes way beyond what we can know. And it's as if the whole human drama, from the drama of our personal destiny to the drama of our human destiny, this drama that we take so personally and think we can see and think we're doing it is actually being done to us and through us. We're not really doing it in the way we think we are. So the paradox here is that we have responsibility that we must carry out, and yet our carrying out of that responsibility is beyond us, far beyond us, even though we do it. And then he says, this is due. At the very moment of due, the fundamental point is actualized. Yet, it is not the beginning or the end of the fundamental point. It is not the eternal abiding of the fundamental point. Should this not be called due? So our human action, which is always volitional, is also Genjo Koan, the whole of the truth manifesting in every moment. We're holding the world up in every moment with our wholesome action. Next paragraph. Although practicing wholesome action is due, it cannot be discerned. Although this due is the vital I, E-Y-E, it cannot be discerned. Due is not actualized for the sake of discernment. Discernment by the vital I is not the same as discernment by something else. So there's something in us then, beyond our discernment, which we need, and we do discern, but there's something in us beyond that that is vital, our life energy somehow. And practice brings us closer to this vitality. Other translations, instead of using the word discernment and discerning, they use the word calculation and calculating. And in a way, that makes it easier to understand. We do good because our life energy wants us to do good. We don't do good for some calculating reason. So that gives you a different take on it. But I think that's good. We don't calculate, you know, because people do good for all kinds of reasons, like they want to be known as a person who does good, they want to have a good reputation, they want to be respected, they want to be loved. And all those things are calculations. They may be benign calculations, maybe. And maybe if they work to make you do good, so what? But here he's saying, no, we when we really do this precept, we're doing it beyond all calculations, beyond all discernment. Wholesome action, Dogen again, is neither existent nor non-existent. It's neither form nor emptiness. It's just due. Actualizing at any place or actualizing at any moment is inevitably due. This due always actualizes all that is wholesome action. Although actualizing due is the fundamental point, it is neither arising nor ceases, neither causes nor conditions. The entering, abiding, and departing of due is also like this. When one wholesome action among all wholesome actions is due, all things, the whole body, and the true ground all together are moved to do. So we're human, and what we're learning from Dogen is that as human beings, we are animals who have a moral sense and a moral commitment. Whether we choose to take it up or not, and to take it seriously or not, this is how we're built. In Buddha Dharma, and certainly for Dogen, other animals have equal value. There's no hierarchy of value among creatures, including inanimate objects and grasses and stones. Everything is of ultimate value, but everything is different, and everything has different capacities. And our capacity involves this kind of moral functioning. So for us, doing good is vitally important for us to realize what we are. It is not an extra thing or a convenience. So there is the whole kind of theory of moral action as convenience. Well, if we went around beating everybody up, it would be a messed up world. We got to get along, so it's practical. Be nice because other people will be nice to you, and that all that is true. But here Dogen is saying, not, that might be true, but what I'm talking about is something different from that and more than that. And the whole universe depends on our realizing this. Just as the whole universe depends on every kind of creature to realize its nature. And I have felt for a long time now that, you know, even though when people got interested in Buddhism a long time ago, it was because of the meditation and the sort of more interesting, exciting spiritual dimensions. But the truth is, I think that Buddha's teaching begins and ends with moral conduct. I think that's where he starts. And that's where he ends. I think it's the central teaching of all of Buddhism. And I think that Buddha, at least in Dogen's reading of Buddha, sees moral conduct as the essence of reality itself. In other words, moral conduct is beyond moral conduct. And this, in a way, as you could say, is the theme of this fascicle. Both cause and effect, Dogen again, both cause and effect of wholesome action actualize the fundamental point through due. Cause is not before, and effect is not after. Cause is complete, and effect is complete. Cause is all-inclusive, just as Dharma is all-inclusive. Effect is all-inclusive, just as Dharma is all-inclusive. Although effect is experienced, induced by cause, one is not before and the other is not after. We say that both before and after are all-inclusive. So when you think about it, actualizing the fundamental point, Genjo Koan, implies that everything is included in every moment. So causality, do this and then that happens, is violated by that principle. Everything is complete in itself in every moment. And those are the final words that Dogen writes about do wholesome action. And in saying, in finishing it off in that way, he's widening the picture still more, finally, talking about cause and effect, which is, cause and effect is also the cause and effect of the universe as a whole, without human beings in it. cause and effect, in other words, is a bigger category than the karma that human beings create. Cause and effect is, in effect, what happens. What happens? Cause and effect is happenstance. And happening, what happens, happens in time. That is what time is. It's happening of things. But here he's saying that happening in time is also happening in, if you will, eternity. Because every moment is all-inclusive and complete. And this reflection is the deep background of the precept, do wholesome action. We human beings are floating in the vast ocean of time, which is to say, what happens. We are among the things that happen. We're born, we die. So we're floating in that vast ocean of happenstance, and we are that vast ocean. So it's not like there's the ocean and we're in it. We are the ocean. And that's why what we do and refrain from doing matters so much. So that's the end of the discussion of the second precept. And the third one he discusses next, but very, very briefly, fortunately. So I'll do that one and then I'll stop. Here's what he says. The third precept being, purify the mind. And this is very strange. Here's Kaz's translation. Purify your own mind. This means that you refrain from. Purify through, refrain from, you that is your own. You that is mind, your own that refrains from, mind that refrains from, mind that does, purify through do, your own do, you do. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. So that's what he says. That's pretty much all that he has to say. There's another paragraph, but that's pretty much the pith of what he says about this precept. And I admire Kaz for this translation that I'm sure he worked on with Peter for a very, very long time. And they did a good job. Because this passage in the original is impossible. Because in it, Dogen does what he does now and again. He does this more than, I don't know how many times in Chopo Genzo, but he does it now and again. He takes the words of a phrase, word by word, and he basically combines them and mixes them up in every possible way, without any regard to whether it makes sense or not. He just, you know, takes them and mixes them up in all combinations. Why does he do this? He often does it at the end of a long teaching so that he can kind of take away whatever way you might have had of understanding what he's saying so that we can notice how much attached we are to making sense and how arbitrary this is, the making of sense. And how what he's trying to say the whole time is that this is beyond making sense, and here we go and we make sense of it. And he's writing it in some, even though his writing is difficult, it does sort of make sense. And so at the end, he sort of takes apart the language so that it's pretty clear that this is not making sense. So I guess the message here is that to purify your mind is just to do your life with your whole heart and not be so stuck on meaning. Maybe there's no meaning. Even though we're human and we have brains and we will forever be attached to meaning. Still, try your best to live your life just with an open heart, just loving the world and others and doing right by everybody, beyond anything you know or any of your values or good reasons why you should be good or do good or whatever. And now I'm going to read you the pretty much literal translation of the Japanese that can be found in, I think, volume 3 of the 8-volume translation of Shobo Genzo done by the brilliant scholars at Stanford. And I'm going to read it. The whole thing is full of, every phrase is in quotation marks. You know, I'm not, you won't get that from my reading of it, but because he's not saying something, he's just putting words down. So it's, all the phrases are in quotation marks. So, but here's the way it reads. And what they say in their footnote is that they say this is a monstrous translation, and it is, you know, but it's literal. To purify one's own mind is the one's, apostrophe yes, of do no, N-O, is the purify of do no. It is the own of one's, the mind of one's. It is the own of do, is the mind of do no. It is the mind of to practice, is the purify of to practice, is the own of to practice, is the ones of to practice. Therefore, it is said, this is the teaching of the Buddhas. So, in Japanese, a Japanese person would sort of get it like that. So, you know, is he having fun or is he serious? I don't know. Then here's the last paragraph. Buddhas are like Shiva, the creator god of the world. While the spirits of Shiva are sometimes the same and sometimes different, they are not necessarily Buddhas. Buddhas are also like wheel-turning kings. However, not all the wheel-turning kings are necessarily Buddhas. Investigate and study this point. Those who do not examine what Buddhas are may appear to strive with great effort, but they are sentient beings who only suffer and are not practitioners of the Buddha way. Refraining from unwholesome action and doing wholesome action are like the donkey has not left, yet the horse has arrived. And that's the end of that part, the end of the discussion of the three pure precepts. So Shiva is the boss of the worlds beyond, you know, in the heavens. And the wheel-turning kings are the great rulers of this world. And so their actions are all included in Buddha action, but Buddha action isn't the same as their action because they are not practicing the three pure precepts. They may make an effort, you know, to do it, but they're not really doing it. And so whatever they do, good as it might be, doesn't really help. Unless we understand what he's been teaching us in this essay, Dogen is saying, and really take it to heart, we're going to just be confused and suffering like Shiva and wheel-turning kings. We'll be working very, very hard. Maybe we'll be even like them, accruing a lot of power and doing all sorts of stuff. But basically, we'll be getting nowhere. Don't do that. Instead of doing that, practice the three pure precepts always, and then no matter whether we are very accomplished or not accomplished at all, we'll be carrying out the whole of the Buddha's way. So the donkey that appears, the donkey and the horse that appear at the end here, the donkey is not the same donkey as the donkey that's looking at the well. This is a different metaphor. And people, this is a Zen saying from a story. The horse arrives before the donkey has left, is the phrase. And there are different ways of looking at it. But I think that the donkey refers to a not-so-great practitioner, and the horse is the great and awakened practitioner. So what he's saying here is that even though we might still be donkeys, when we practice the three pure precepts in a very simple and sincere way, however we do it, we're already going to be horses anyway, even if we're still donkeys. So that's not the end of the essay, though. The essay goes on to discuss the story that I mentioned last week, which is the reason why he writes the whole essay, because it's really a commentary on the story about the bird's nest Roshi and the famous poet Su Dengbo, who's one of the great Chinese poets, who has a dialogue with this Roshi. And next week we'll finish the fascicle by discussing what Dogen says about that story. So thank you for listening to all that. It's wonderful to study Dogen. It's pretty kind of wacky, you know. It's not the usual thing, but I think it's somehow or other it's very illuminating to me anyway, and very encouraging. I always find Dogen very encouraging. So before we go into our groups, just a few things in case some of you have to leave. Again, reminding us all of the opening of the practice period on the 28th of March. That's not this Saturday, but the Saturday after that. And we're going to be at the church at 10 doing Zazen. And some of you will want to go to the No King's Day protests, which are all over the place. And there are, I think some Everyday Zen people are going to gather at Tam Junction. And as far as I understand, you can ask around, ask your friends, I believe the Bay Area people who want to do that are actually going to meet at the church early, maybe at 9, and carpool together down the hill to Tam Junction, and then carpool back, because we'll sit in the morning quietly as a kind of support for the three pure precepts, right? Avoid unwholesome action, do good action, purify the mind, which we hope for ourselves and the whole world. And then we'll have lunch, and then after lunch we'll do our ceremonies to open the practice period, and we'll have the Shuso entering ceremony for Tracy, and then we'll have the opening Dharma talk of the practice period, and then we'll have Ryaku Fusatz, full moon or Bodhisattva precepts ceremony to conclude the day. So it'll be a very full afternoon. Kathy and I have to go away the next day. We have to jump on an airplane because we are going to celebrate the 90th birthday of our old Zen teacher, Zentatsu, in Santa Fe. But we're only going to be there for the day. We're going to come back, and I'll be here for the first seminar of the practice period, which happens to be on April Fool's Day. Very appropriate. April Fool's Day, April 1st, which also is the evening of that Passover begins. So all these things at once. And the 21st, which is this weekend, right, is the solstice. It's spring starting in a few days. Yay! And I hope the people in the colder places back east are going to enjoy spring. One more thing, just so you know, in case you're interested, I'll be doing a poetry reading. I don't do that many poetry readings, but I'm going to do one with two great poets, Sarah Rosenthal and Mia Malhotra. Both of them are really good poets, in Adobe Books in San Francisco, April 4th. That's another Saturday. So those of you who want to attend in the Bay Area can think about that. Okay. So let's get into groups of three, and we'll have
recording stopped.
3 minutes, 3 minutes.